In the last episode, episode number 32, No Better Time to Start Your Woodworking Business, I talked about starting a furniture repair business, more as an example, as a direction. But I got some inquiries as to exactly how to go about doing furniture as a business. Several people wanted details. So here we go. My name is Roger Kugler. This is Working at Woodworking Podcast, episode number 33, Furniture Repair Business, The Details. I think furniture would be an excellent business model, furniture repair, not selling furniture because you can't get furniture to sell unless you make it yourself, which would be an idea. But there's a real high demand for furniture repair right now. And there is a very low supply of people who can do those services. A lot of the older folks who are doing this have either retired or are no longer in business. And one of the neat things about furniture repair as a business is it is very accessible. You don't have to spend $30,000 on equipment, rent a 10,000 square foot space, and hire 25 highly specialized and skilled employees. You can do this in your garage part time. So, let's give this some serious consideration. What would you need in addition to your basic woodworking equipment to start to repair furniture? I think one of the important things to consider that most people who have not done this will totally overlook is you need space. Furniture takes up a lot of room. Not necessarily the rocking chair that you are working on right now, but the three chairs and the coffee table that somebody has dropped off to you to be repaired. Storage. The furniture takes up a lot of room for storage. Now, you can get around this by employing the one-in, one-out inventory rule. That means you bring in one piece of furniture to be repaired, and you do not accept any more until you get that one fixed and it's picked up by the customer. This can be a little hard because customers are anxious. They want to get this into someone's hands. But if you explain to them the situation and you maintain a jobs list, it could work out very well. In fact, you could do a program where you accept a down payment to hold the customer's place on a job list. A lot of companies do that. A lot of builders will do that. In fact, I know several, canoe builders who, if you want on their list, you have to send them money as a down payment towards the job. So storage is one thing. Honestly, I think that's probably the biggest thing. At least for me, I have a very small workshop and it can get crowded, and I do have that problem of saying no, and I've never implemented a one-in, one-out policy, which I probably should if and when I go back to doing furniture. You will need some moving blankets. These are really cheap. Pick them up at Harbor Freight or on Amazon. I put moving blankets down on my workbench anytime that I work on a piece of furniture. It's just a little added security for that piece of furniture. When a piece of furniture is waiting to be repaired, I cover it with a moving blanket. Just moving stuff around the shop, it doesn't get dinged. Remember, do no harm. You need some type of a tag system. And one of the simplest ones, and I think the most effective one, I learned from a gentleman in Columbus, Ohio. He uses the manila colored paper tags with the string, and he attaches that to each piece that he brings in. He also puts the customer's name and phone number on there, the date in, and any particular notes. just do the repair, do a total, you know, restoration, so on and so forth. And on the backside, he uses that as a time card. Every time he touches that piece of furniture, he writes down the number of minutes that he worked on it. And at that time, he was charging $60 an hour, so every minute he earned $1. And by the time he got that done, he knew exactly what he had into it. Incredibly smart way of doing it. Or you could do it, well, honestly, the way I've done a lot of furniture jobs is I come in and I work on a piece, and let's say I have to repair a broken leg and there's a lot of finishing and sanding that I have to do, and so I glue up the leg and then set it in a corner, cover it with a moving blanket, and 3 days later, a week later, I get back to it, I pull the thing off, I do some sanding on it, maybe some infill with, you know, a filler, and let that set, sand that again, and set it in a corner, cover it with a moving blanket, and then go through the finishing process maybe the week later. And by the time I get this thing done, I have forgotten how much time I have put into it. And so then I do the kind of the fallback method of pricing. If I was going to do this job again, how much would I charge the customer up front? And sometimes that's accurate. More often than not, I think I'm undercharging. I'm not recovering every single minute the way I should be because I wasn't smart enough to write those down, unlike the guy in Columbus, Ohio. You should also consider some type of a receipt, a form, a contract. I know a lot of people who do this full-time professionally. I only do it when I have to. They have a receipt book where they write down all the customer's information, their name, address, phone number, all the specifics about the furniture and exactly what needs to be done, and the customer signs it. And in the wording on this receipt is the terms of doing business. One thing that a lot of them will put in there is that any piece left over 30 days after notification that it's ready to be picked up can be sold, removed from the premises, or donated, so that you're not sitting on a piece for 3 years and somebody comes back in and says, "Hey, you remember that chair that you repaired for me?" No. And it just kind of makes the customer responsible, and all your cards are out on the table. They know what to expect. Some people have trouble with furniture being dropped off and never picked up again. And you might have, you know, $300 or $400 into a repair and you never see the customer again. Do you just get rid of the piece? You're not going to probably sell that to recover your expenses. So that's a real problem. Consider asking for, you know, a 50% down payment or something. At least that would encourage people to come back and pick up their piece. Honestly, I've never had a problem with that. Well, I'll take that back. There's probably 2 jobs I have taken that I just had a feeling that I was never going to see this person again, and I was right. And to be honest with you, I never actually started the job. I was going to wait to see if they contacted me in 3 weeks or so. They never did. They never have. But that's not the best way of doing this. Another thing you will need to get into that most average woodworkers don't really touch. If they're just building furniture, building kitchen cabinets, they don't really have a need to get into this very deep. But as you do furniture repair, furniture restoration, you will need to become an expert at this. And that is color. Virtually every piece of furniture that you bring in to do a repair, you will need to match the finish and the color of the finish to the original. And this is where artistry comes in. Some people are incredibly good at this, and some people are not. I can do a fair job. I would never consider myself an expert at doing this. And I think the best thing to do here is when you accept the piece of furniture, just tell them up front, I can make the repair less noticeable, but not invisible. And most people are perfectly fine with that. You're also going to need a really good sanding system. You may have that Black & Decker random orbit sander that you've been using for the last 15 years, and it does a good job, and you're happy with it. When you get into some high-end furniture repair, especially like tables, that's probably not going to cut it. We'll talk more about this in a few minutes. Also, some type of a spray system, something like an HVLP sprayer. There's other ways you can kind of get around not using that. If you have it right now, fantastic. If not, start thinking about it, because if you do this a lot, you're going to end up with some type of a spray system. And probably the last thing that you're going to need that you may not have right now is a lathe. A lot of furniture that you're going to repair is turned furniture. Turned legs, turned spindles, turned stretchers, and they break. That's kind of the meat and potatoes of the business, is repairing broken, turned furniture parts. And so if you have a lathe and you know how to use a lathe, you are golden. You're good to go. If you don't have one, I would strongly encourage you to start looking into getting one. Now, one other tool you might want to consider is a van, a pickup truck, maybe a trailer. Some customers are not going to be able to transport their dining room table to you. You will need to go and pick it up. Or you could just simply pass on that job. But if you have some way of transporting furniture, you will just have several legs up on everybody else. I've been able to survive a lot of dining room table repairs by taking the table apart there at the customer's house, taking the legs off, removing any stretchers, and carrying the tabletop out and putting it on top of my Jeep. Getting older, I don't really enjoy that anymore, so those days are probably numbered. If I was going to get serious about this, I would probably look for an old used van, something that has some height to it on the inside, but it is covered so that if it's raining or snowing or something like that, that piece is not going to get wet. Several of the furniture repair people I know have vans. That seems to work out very, very well for them. Before we get too deep into this, I want to talk about three different areas of furniture repair. If you just hang out your shingle that says Joe's Furniture Repair, there are three things you're going to end up dealing with. Number one is repairing. You're going to repair furniture. You're going to make that chair functional again. It's kind of like a car mechanic. You know, there's something wrong with your car. It's not running right, or you have an idiot light on the dash, and you take it to the car mechanic and he pulls the code. He figures out what's wrong. He fixes it. He gives it back to you. Boom. That's all he's doing, is he's simply fixing the car. Furniture repair means you are simply fixing the furniture. Nothing else. Another branch of furniture repair is furniture restoration. Now, this has to deal with the look of the furniture. And if you're restoring a chair, you are improving the look and the function of the piece to original. Let's say somebody brings a sideboard to you that is really dark and almost black finish on it, and they want it to look better, and you need to fix a drawer that's been broke for like two generations. that would be a restoration. You have to correct the finish and try to bring that back to near original condition. Sometimes people will want to totally change the look of something. An old dining table, again, really thick, almost black finish on it. They hate that. It doesn't fit the room, doesn't fit their style. They want it totally stripped down, and they want the piece painted to match the rest of their dining room decor. That would fall under the restoration because you're taking something and you're improving the look of it. A third area of furniture is conserving. Someone has brought you a piece of furniture that is very old, 200 years old, 300 years old, or a piece that is historically valuable. We banter the word antique around all the time. I mean, yeah, I guess in a few years I'm going to be antique. I almost drive an antique vehicle as my everyday driver. So antique kind of has lost its meaning. There's a lot of things that are antique that have no real value. But there are some antiques that have great value. And these are things that need to be conserved, not restored. You see these on Antique Roadshow on PBS all the time. The person will say, had this not been restored, it would be worth between $15,000 and $20,000. In its present condition, you'll be lucky to get $200 for it. That finishes everything on these old antiques. And there's a very special way that you have to handle these. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Okay, let's break these down individually. Repairing furniture. Broken legs, broken stretchers, broken rungs are probably 90% of all furniture repairs. You can also get into veneer work where somebody had a plant sitting on a buffet table and the plant leaked and there's this giant water damage spot on it. All the veneer has discolored, the finish has failed, and the veneer is starting to lift up, and it looks like crap. You need to make that look brand new. Scratches and gouges. You can have an old piece of furniture that is perfectly functional, a family heirloom, but it just doesn't look very good. You know, the surface is all scratched up, there's a couple gouges in there, and that can be fairly easily fixed if you have the skills. Another type of repair you will get involved with is animal damage. Not making this up. Dog bite is one of the leading causes of furniture repair in America. Your pooch chewed the leg off your end table. Or cat scratch. Your cat used this piece of furniture as a scratching post and have totally destroyed, you know, the back leg that's behind the couch that nobody could see. You were cleaning one day, you pulled the thing out, and you saw that Fluffy has totally destroyed this thing. So animal damage is a real thing. Water damage. A basement floods, furniture was down there, maybe in storage, and it sat there for a little while, nobody really thought about it, and the piece is ruined. Most things can be fixed if they're made from wood. So you'll see a lot of those jobs come in. And probably one of my favorite and also my most dreaded is road rash. Yes, that's right. Piece of furniture fell off the truck while moving from the apartment into their new home. Usually the scenario plays out something like this. You see a pickup truck pull into your driveway. You see a guy get out and go to the tailgate. The look on his face is something like a POW versus a WWF SmackDown. He's not looking really good. And then you see a wife emerge from the passenger side of the pickup. And she has a look on her face. It's one of those looks that you know that you don't want to mess with. He comes up, introduces himself, asks if you would take a look at the armoire in the back of his pickup truck. You go out, you look at it. She doesn't say a word, but she just stands there hovering. He very sheepishly explains that it happened to fall off the back of the pickup truck as they were moving. She interjects and says, "You told me you tied it down." He mumbles something that you really didn't want to hear anyway, and you proceed to look at this absolutely smashed armoire. I mean, an armoire is a large piece of furniture, and you are looking at like 27 different pieces of furniture with about two joints still intact. This is road rash. Little pro tip here, you need to be talking to her, not him. He already knows he's in the doghouse. You need to keep her from killing him later. I would recommend be very positive about this. "Oh, well, this isn't too bad. Oh, yeah, I've seen a lot worse. Yeah, I think we can put this together. There's absolutely no hope." "Yeah, no problem. Let's take this into the shop where we can get a better look at it. And hopefully things can get cooled down a little bit and talk to her. Don't talk to him. He's already screwed up. You need to kind of, you know, put her in charge of this and reassure her." Probably the last thing you want to do is to tell her that this is now firewood. Probably not going to end well. But that's an extreme case that usually doesn't happen, but it can. So if you're doing a lot of furniture repair, the tools that you're going to really need to concentrate on are adhesives. You'll need probably several different types of glues, your PVAs, and epoxies, and hide glue. Learn hide glue. It can get you out of so many tight spots. Bondo? Yes, that's... I mean wood filler, which is really Bondo with a different label on it. Yeah, it's a fiberglass filler. You have a fiberglass resin that's mixed with a bunch of fillers to create a paste, and you add a little bit of hardener and mix the two together, and you get about 5, maybe 10 minutes of working time until it sets up. There's styrene in the hardener, and it smells like crap. But very, very good product. Dries very, very hard, usually to a nice light gray. You can sand it. You can carve it. You can use a file on it. It's generally a little harder than wood, so it's pretty easy to shape. You can sand, and it takes color very well. So if someone brings you a nice Queen Anne chair that Fido decided to use as a teething toy, you can reshape that chewed up area with some Bondo and colorize it and make the repair. Sometimes you're actually better off in some cases to shave the wood down to something flat where you can glue new wood onto it and then reshape that. There's different ways of doing different repairs. This is where your color comes in. Your dry pigments, your resin sticks, your wax sticks, your touch-up markers. You need to look up Mohawk Finishing Products Company down in North Carolina. They kind of invented furniture repair. They have hundreds and hundreds of different types of products. They've been in business for, 1776, something like that. Not really. But they are the experts in furniture repair. And something else you can get into with furniture repair is mobile furniture repair, where somebody has scratches in a dining room table, but you don't really want to bring the table into your shop. You can go to the customer's house and make the repair right there. That's actually what Mohawk specializes in, is products to do those mobile repairs. You need to get in touch with them. All right. Let's talk about restoration and refinishing. You'll get phone calls from someone asking, "Do you refinish furniture?" that can be a loaded question because a lot of people think of refinishing as totally removing the finish and putting a new one back on. Restoration is more of restoring the finish that is there. So let me break this down. If somebody wants something restored, typically they don't want it stripped. So you use techniques to make the existing finish look better than it is. And honestly, one of the easiest ways to get started with that is give it a good bath. Yeah, break out the soap and water. Get some Dawn dish soap, a detergent, and some water, a soft cloth, and just give it a bath. Don't be afraid to put water on. I mean, don't flood the thing or soak the thing, but use some water, use a soft cloth, and use some elbow grease. You will be amazed at the grime and guck and dirt. I mean, literally, your bucket of water is going to turn black on some pieces, especially if it's really old. It's been in a house that was heated with coal. That coal dust just settles on everything. And a lot of times furniture would be polished back then, but it wouldn't actually be cleaned. So as you're using an oil polish or maybe a wax polish, you're really embedding that coal dust into the furniture piece. And a detergent will cut through that and will release that. And it's amazing just the difference it can make on a piece. Then just let the piece dry. It's going to be perfectly fine. The water is not going to kill anything, even veneer. And if it does, that's veneer that you needed to repair anyway. So in a way, that's kind of helping you out. The second thing is to use mineral spirits. Mineral spirits on either a white or sometimes a green buffing pad. That's like 1,200, 1,000 grit. The green pads are like around 800 or so. And just gently going over every piece with that mineral spirits. The mineral spirits is going to lift things off the finish, off the surface that the detergent will not touch. By using both of these, you are getting 99% of all that gook and grime off of the piece. You'll be amazed at what comes up. Don't be surprised if you start removing some finish. If it's excessive, stop, and then you might want to do something else. But most of the time, just a light, you know, scrubbing over the finish with a mineral-soaked greenie will do a really, really nice job. The finish may look dull, but you can bring that back. You want to get the dirt and the grime out. So after you have the piece all cleaned up, then you need to make a decision on how you're going to proceed. And every piece is a little different. I'm not going to, you know, recommend one way or the other. Some techniques that I have used is to use a very thin shellac over top of everything as kind of a sealer coat. A lot of times that will bring the original finish and the grain right out and make everything pop. Then you can put on various top coats. Sometimes you would use an oil to reinvigorate the finish and the wood, and then add a top coat there. A lot of furniture just had an oil finish on them, and so you're going to restore that. I'm not telling you this is what you should do. Every piece is different, and that's where your judgment and your skill is going to come in. Now, I do make it a habit that when somebody brings me a piece of furniture for a broken stretcher, that when I give it back to them, it looks better than when they brought it to me. And an easy way of doing this is wax. If you just use some paste wax and go over the entire piece, it really, really, really can brighten and improve the look of the piece. Those little scratches that you see will kind of disappear, and it just kind of renews that luster that make people want to reach out and touch the piece. That's what you're really looking for. I could do an entire podcast just on waxes. Well, maybe I will someday. But I love to wax the piece before I give it back to the customer. And a little trick here is that if the piece that you return to the customer looks so much better than the other five chairs in the dining set, it's very likely that they'll bring those other five chairs to you and ask you to do the same thing so that they all look wonderful. I've also used a product called Restore Finish. It's basically a paraffin oil and pigment stains mixed in. It comes in different woods. It comes in like a red maple or a dark oak or a light oak or a honey oak, I think they call it, a maple, you know, different colors. And it does a nice job just kind of beefing up a piece. A lot of restorers don't like it because it is a paraffin oil, which means that that's going to hang around for a while. It acts a little bit like silicone, except that eventually the paraffin oil will evaporate. It takes like 3 months or so, where the silicone will be there forever and ever and ever, amen, and make your life a living. You'll wish that you hadn't gone into furniture repair. But anyway, that's something that can be used on certain pieces. I've used that on kitchens where a person wants their kitchen to look better, but they don't want to go through an entire refinishing process. And I've gone in, I've used the soap and water, the detergent, and follow that up with a little bit of the mineral spirits. Usually you don't have to do that. In the kitchen, most of the problem comes from grease and oil buildup. And so that's where the detergent does a really nice job. And then I'll use the Restore Finish and just go over the cabinets. Most of these are like oak cabinets, and it just does a nice job of kind of brightening them and adds a little bit of protection to them. Customers have been very happy with that, and it's very inexpensive to do. Usually I will leave them the can of finish so that they can do this themselves, or maybe their cleaning, person could, go over and do this again sometime. So that's typically what's involved in a restoration, a reef. Okay, I see that this is starting to run long, and I don't want to get into really long podcast episodes. So I'm going to go ahead and break it off here, and we'll pick up next week. There's a lot more I'd like to talk about as far as furniture restoration and conserving furniture and fraudulent furniture. So stay tuned for that. Recommendations for the week. I'm going to suggest that you check out two fellows on YouTube, Charles Neal Woodworking and Phil Lowe. The links are in the show notes. These are both longtime woodworkers, furniture experts. Unfortunately, they have both passed away recently, but they have left us with some fantastic videos that I think you ought to check out. I think you'll learn a lot from both of these gentlemen. I'd also like to make a big shout out to Dan, who bought me not one, but three cups of coffee on Buy Me a Cup of Coffee website, which is a way that Dan and you could help support the show. It's real easy. There's a link in the show notes and on the webpage, Working at Woodworking Podcast. I greatly appreciate the support, Dan. Glad to have you on board. Missed jobs? Yeah, furniture. I think three calls for furniture repair this week, which is really what kind of prompted the episode. I was going to do something else, but it's like we just really need people to do this. Plus, I got a couple people who reached out to me and asked for some more details. So I think it'll all work out. Again, thank you for listening. And if you have any questions, please feel free to give me a call. My number is in the show notes, or send me an email. I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have. So until next week, when we will continue this, happy woodworking.